afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Talk to us, Bill.
Hey, we have a sponsor this hour. It's Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape Machinery can get you pretty much anything you want in John Deere, and now's the time to get it. Going into summer, don't get caught short. Availability is rearing its ugly head again, so go in and see them and tell them what you want, and if they don't have it, they can sure find it for you. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake, and that's right between the Oasis and Pine Grove exits. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Isn't that tidy? Gave me just enough time to put my headphones on. It is May 1st, 2022, in case we air the show again, which I think we will because it's kind of a bit of a timeless topic, I guess. It'll be discussed at a point in time, but I think we're going to talk about it some more later.
What's that?
Just as a society.
What are we going to talk about?
Secret topic that you don't know about yet.
Really?
Yeah, we haven't really.
You're not going to talk about me, are
we
you?
We just wanted you to get dressed and get
You're
to the studio and do your commercial.
You're talking about me.
I already told Tom, I'm like, for some reason, Bill felt the need to dress up just to make me look bad. It's radio, for Lord's sake. Oh, my goodness. So you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We have archives that go back into like 2010 or something on all sorts of topics. I really hope you make use of them and do whatever you want with them. They're not copyrighted. We're not going to hunt you down on the internet or ban you or, I don't know, be mad at you if you use them in any way. Please use them to educate people. So our guest today is Dr. Tom Andrews. I have like a microbio for you. I know you've been a psychiatrist for over 40 years. That's pretty complicated. That was a toughie. And what I do know is you practice in Reading because we're neighbors. We're neighbors in the business community. Physically neighbors. He's right across the way. Graduated from Loma Linda University School of Medicine in 1979. And that's like all I've got if you'd like to share more.
I did a residency at Northwestern in Chicago and did some work setting up programs around the country for adolescents and adults and eating disorders. And then I moved to Reading back in 94 and was at the hospital that was a psychiatric hospital here before it closed. And I was the director of the adolescent program.
Nice. Well, I know I can testify that you have a very busy practice because you guys are not open on Friday, and Friday is the only day I ever tell people to come to the office because it's the only day they can find parking. So I know you're not just talking about being a psychiatrist. I know you actually are one, and I know you're really busy. So I actually posted the shows. We did a show with you in December of 2010, 2011, went to 2019. And I know we've been kicking it around here for a while, but there's been a lot going on that I think you deal with all the time. And we would like to see a little bit behind the curtain, I guess. What does it look like from your perspective? What are people going through at the moment?
It's very stressful. Not only are we dealing with the stress of the pandemic that we had previously, but coming out of the pandemic, people are confused. What do I do? It's kind of like what we're seeing in the court systems and how the different areas of the country treat it differently. And it's a confusion because the science around it has debatable outcomes. And, for instance, some people say that masks help and some people say they do not. Some people say the vaccines help. Some people say, well, that's questionable. So it's creating anxiety for a lot of people. So people try and do the best they can with the information they have. And that is probably the biggest problem is the information, being able to get it consistently in a way that is digestible, doable, and where people can feel confident about it. So I think there are examples out there that show that sometimes a leader in the scientific community will say, well, this helps. And then a month later, they'll say, well, no, that's not what I meant. This helps. Because the science for something new, an organism that's new, is ever-changing. And people are ever-educating themselves on it. So I think that creates an anxiety. And we talked about it was kind of like the latest form is a mass formation psychosis. They talk about it, where a person becomes extremely anxious. He's looking for some specific leadership to give him attention and focus on a particular issue, and then hoping that that issue will give him peace of mind. And there are kind of four key components of that condition. This pandemic actually makes it worse because there's a lack of social connectedness.
So, right.
So sure. So that's going to create a problem. That's one of the things. There's a lack of sense of making sense of things. So you can see how that would add to it.
Like you can't get a straight answer.
Yeah, you don't know what it is. And then there's a kind of a free-floating sense of anxiety. Oh, grandma's in the hospital. Oh, well, someone else. Oh, my best friend died. Or somebody.
Yeah,
else.
Am I going to lose my job?
Am I going to lose my job? Yeah, all these things. And then there's this free-floating psychological discontent with everything.
Right.
So those four things make it up. So that sets you up for glomming onto it, in a real scientific term, a leader that will rescue you out of this dilemma. And so you will choose a leader, whichever camp you may be in, that will put you into that leader's position. And then that leader has a possibility of, as Carl Jung says, his theory about group therapy, which I don't agree with, but one smart individual becomes one large idiot. So it's where they're not really putting their effort into facts, mm-hmm. but they're putting their effort into emotion. And that is the key. It's the emotional manipulation of people. And
governments. There's just been a lot of scaring.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen so much, you know, scaring mm-hmm. of people. Mm-hmm. And I think most people, it's like, okay, tell me how this works. Let me make up my own mind. But that hasn't been one of the choices. Mm-hmm. Then, okay, so what's the part about where now they're going to scare people and tell them what to think or kind of emotionally manipulate them? And then does the demonizing come later? Is that all part and parcel of the same thing, or am I skipping ahead?
Yeah, we're skipping
ahead. Okay, forget that. We'll get to that part.
No, we'll get to that. But I do think, you know, this idea of this mass formation psychosis came from a Belgian psychotherapist, Dr. Matthias Demet, who described it as in which, like a Goebbels applied political politics, he says it's much where a mass or crowd of people become controlled by a single leader. And he talked about that. And there's a French social psychologist, Dr. Laban, who also defined a crowd as a group of individuals who have a common idea, belief, or ideology, and he undergoes a profound psychological transformation, and the person ceases to think independently, instead relies on the group synthesis for a simplification of the ideas. Because this stress is so complex that they don't know what to do. They don't have a solution.
And the information changes so often.
And then the information changes.
By the time they get their feet on the ground, something else throws them off.
Exactly.
Right.
And so, you know, I think it's important that once the group incorporates its ideas, it's the individuals and groups cease to psychologically exist as independent people.
Right.
That's when you get this mass formation psychosis.
Right.
And that's critical.
So what does it look like? I mean, if you just see all of these different things, right? People have stopped talking to their relatives. They're in a fight with people on an airplane. There's been a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Is that all just part and parcel of it? Does it start at a 1, go to a 10, and go back down, or does it just hit fever pitch and just go till it?
Well, just think if you're believing one way or the other,
right?
You're going to believe a certain direction, and if you don't think in that direction, you have decoupled yourself from the group from which you feel secure with. And that decoupling creates a great sense of anxiety, even more so. So your tendency is going to, I'm not going to decouple. I'm going to stay with my original idea until proven otherwise.
Right.
Dig in.
That's
where you end up with two camps.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, that's right.
And you're going to stay with your tribe no matter what, and not really stay objective.
So yeah. how long can people, I realize everybody's different, but how long can people do that before it starts to just eat their lunch? Because it's like anger or anything else. I mean, you can only sustain those kinds of things for...
Yeah, this can cause stress. It can create, which we'll get into some of that later too, but the idea of what it does to your body,
mm-hmm.
and when it forms those kind of inflammatory responses in your system, your defenses go down, your mental ability to coordinate brain-derived neurotrophic factor to help grow your neurons, to grow your supportive neurons, you then are at risk of actually having more physical and mental problems, such as depression, such as anxiety, and those things, and they just build up.
Mm-hmm. Kind of by letting that sweep you up.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you?
I think we just need to look at where the state of how it started. I mean,
okay,
in the sense of. We look at controlling people to reduce conflict in government is sometimes done. And in World War II, before that time, the German people were under great stress with the finances and economic, the breakup of the Weimar Republic and what happened and the economic turmoil that caused for people, you know, wheelbarrows of German marks for a haircut,
right,
and things
right.
like that, a loaf of bread. So this created something that was an opportunity for someone who could simply define a problem in its simplicity, and in its simplicity create a simple solution, which was not a good solution, but mm-hmm. it was a simple solution that everyone could grab onto and hold onto. And they exploited racism. They exploited nationalism, and in that process, the German people felt they had someone who could lead them through the problem. And that's where we are at great risk now for our government either going to lead us through the problem in a way that could be destructive and oversimplified mm-hmm. and not complex enough to understand it. For instance, I mean, here's Goebbels' quote. I think it's worth looking at this quote. There was no point in seeking to convert the intellectuals. For intellectuals would never be converted and would anyway always yield to the stronger. And this will always be the man in the street. Arguments must therefore be crude, clear, forceful, and appeal to emotions and instinct and not the intellect. That was Goebbels' style.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that now?
Yeah, it was all about the emotion.
It's all about the emotion. Yeah, are you mm-hmm. going to be good to... Grandma, are you going to do it for the common good, or are you going to do it because it's science?
Right.
And when people ask about science, then, you know, they bring out the big bat.
Yeah, and that's not, you know, it's not more true than with the whole mask thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you're not wearing a mask. It's good for everybody else. And, you know, you're a bad person if you don't.
So he said, truth is unimportant.
He actually just said it.
He said, and entirely subordinate to tactics and psychology. He said this, if you tell a lie big enough and keep it repeating, people will eventually come to believe it.
Oh, I thought we invented that in the last, you know, 20 years.
He says the lie can be maintained only for such a time as the state can shield people from the political, economic, or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its powers to repress dissent, for the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie, and thus by extension, the truth is the greatest enemy of the state. Now,
wow. Okay, so
does that feel kind of familiar?
Well, look at what's happening with Twitter right now. I mean, everybody is in such an uproar over that because everybody has their own opinion, and that is not a good thing.
How dare we let everybody talk?
Exactly.
How crazy is that?
Yeah. Don't come up with a different point of view. Go to the emotional angle when you don't agree with somebody.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we're seeing.
Wow. And stay away from truth because that's a huge problem.
Yeah.
I think the goal of these people,
I'll leave it vague because I'm not going to be specific on that, but the leaders find an idea that is going to meet the crowd's needs, and then they propel it to the common good. The mm-hmm. word common good should be a signal to you.
It's like a red flag.
That's a red flag that there's no intellectual process going on here.
Interesting. Okay, well, good time for our first break. We can let that soak in for 5 seconds. And people can either scratch their head or go, oh, I'm not crazy after all. I guess it's you're going to go one way or the other. sorry. Getting ready to do some coughing. I think I'll stop doing that.
Yeah, don't do that.
So you are listening to We the People. You can find this show at wethepeopleradio.us.
You're in my space. I'm scared.
It's kind of funny, though, that some of that music from a long time ago, you listen to it in the context of today, and you go, that's weird. How did they know? How did they know there would be a secondary application for this song? That's very strange. Yeah, because when in your life was anybody ever telling you you were... Well,
it was always, you know, you had a 3-foot buffer, you know, stay outside of 3 feet when you talk to somebody.
I mean, Seinfeld made an episode, he's a close talker, right?
Yeah.
The guy was a close talker.
Now you got to be 6 feet.
And now there's marks on the floor in the store. It's like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay, so where do we go from here? We found out that truth is not our, well, truth is our friend.
It is our friend. But in the meantime, finding the truth has been a difficult process, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think everybody would agree with that.
I mean, because many times these ideas have been distilled to a simplified, a very complicated set of issues have been distilled to a simplified idea and becomes kind of the focus of a hypnotic, single-minded belief. And it's a form of a crowd accepts, incorporates these beliefs as their own, and then they have a trusted leader, and they point them and say, well, he said or she said, and then they move forward. And even if you give them the truth, they didn't say it.
Yeah.
So how do you get past that? I mean, in a Christian mindset, I mean, Jesus, how did he get past the Pharisees and all their traditional mindset? It was just sort of stuck. It was very difficult.
Yeah.
And he had to do very dramatic things to get the attention and change things. So, I mean, I think that principle of avoid abstract ideas, constantly repeat a few ideas, use stereotype phrases, give only one side of the argument, and continuously criticize your opponent, and then you pick out an enemy that you can vilify ad hominem or however you want to do it. And that's sort of their style.
Mm-hmm. That's how you keep it going.
That's how you keep it going.
Because that's true. You have to have something to push off of. You can't just have an open field,
right?
Because people might wander off.
Correct.
So that's how you. Those are the guardrails. Your heretics?
Right. Well, I mean, you could look back at
your non-believers and your heretics.
You could look back at the witch trials.
Yeah.
Right. Similar kind of thing. Oh, the devil's the common enemy. These people are the witches, and they must have done something. And some false accusations could come, and then lives are destroyed, and you know, over 200 lives were snuffed out in Salem, and hundreds and thousands more in Germany, 4,000 in Germany, and during the 1600s, 1500s. So this kind of witch hunting, whoever you choose, whichever side, that type of non-factual, non-critical thinking is what is so dangerous.
Yeah, because once it gets started, then... You know, no. For whatever reason, why is that? Is it just are we just like herd mentality? Are humans just a kind of a herd mentality? Nobody wants to get left off the team. You don't want to be the last guy picked.
Well, I think that's a big part of it. I think everybody wants to be included.
You want to be somewhere in the.
We are social creatures. We want to. Something that's fearful will tend to isolate you, and you'll kind of go from it. So it brings you together with a group with a common theme. We are social creatures, and I think basically. There are idea is that sometimes when we are obsessed with safety, it can lead to mental illness and tyranny. You know, when and that is the issue, because we're kind of, aren't we in a society a bit of an age of cowards? We, you know, it's kind of like, oh, this illness could kill you. Okay. But I thought life was life and death, not
we were
life
die
or
anyway,
death.
Right? Yeah.
It's not life or death, it's life and death.
Yeah.
So, you know, fear, anxiety, helplessness in face of trivial risks is a common pattern in our society.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. You look at your, you know, the greatest generation, they didn't prefer comfort and ease of life over sacrificing for the country, you know, and I mean, Frank Furedi, who's a psychologist, says young people are socialized to feel fragile and overawed by uncertainty. And as a result, the defining feature of the current Western 21st century version of personhood is its vulnerability. Huh. So we are trained that almost like you as a person, you have certain vulnerabilities, and we stress that. And so that person is, so we tend to help each group in the terms of helping them not feel vulnerable, instead of empowering them to feel self-determined and autonomous.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the problem. The message is human weakness instead of the message being human strength. And how can you fight that when the whole society is grabbing it?
Mm-hmm.
So you're a lone voice of dissent.
Yeah.
In this, we're all going to die mentality versus, yes, that's true. We are all going to die.
Well, it's kind of funny. when you say that to people, you're like, I'm sorry, were you under the impression we were getting out alive?
Spaceship Earth. I don't think
it is,
so.
That isn't actually how it works.
So if vulnerability is defining future, then being fearful is the normal state. So, if, you know, so if vulnerability is the defining future, then being fearful is a normal state.
Is fear, and I'm totally just, like, guessing, and I guess it depends on the time, it depends on the people and all that, but what's harder to pitch, you know, fear or hope or faith or whatever the other side of fear is, in your, which is harder to get people kind of corralled under? Because it seems like fear would be easy.
Fear is easy because it requires emotion, and so strong an emotion. Hope. Love is a little more complex.
And it requires kind of your own
resolve
emotional. A little bit.
It is, and it's resolve. It's kind of a free will kind of thing. Because you don't really love something if someone forces you. You will love that car you're driving. Well, no. I pick that car because then I might love it. But
yeah,
with fear, too, you can point to
hundreds of years
current
of arranged
events
marriages.
And, you can point to current events and say, hey, look, see, that's why we need to be afraid. Yeah. This is, look what just happened.
Right.
You know.
So instead of this, so where they kind of do approach the idea of the common good as the noble aspiration, I still feel that the noblest aspiration is find out the truth and then defend it. You know, Tacitus said the desire for safety stands against every great and noble enterprise. So if we're always trying to be worried about our own personal safety, it's going to prevent us from reaching a greater goal, which is really greater for the common good. So if that's the word we want to use. So I think that the most prosperous societies, if you look at them, you know, whether it's 18th century England, and we look at the 15th century Italy, we look at Athens, Greece, during the time of the golden age of Greece, you know, those people were drawn to that because they took risks. In fact, the famous speech by Pericles about the future of Greece, he said, it's because we take risks is why Athens is who Athens is. I mean, what happened at Thermopylae? What happened at the Battle of Salamis? All these things, and Marathon, all these were personal risks, you know, that people took, and to save a nation, to save a civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And are we going to be that way? Are we going to be unwilling to take those risks? So
I don't think people probably feel good about themselves either when there's all this kind of hiding in the bunker.
I don't think
hiding in the bunker actually is a... I mean, nobody as a kid even... you don't play hide in the bunker. Yeah. As a kid, right? You play Take the Hill when you still play outside.
Right.
Nobody says, gosh, you know, when I grow up, I think I'm gonna hide from life and be safe.
Well, they've got safe rooms, they've got safe zones, they've got...
Oh, maybe they do now.
They've got so many things to encourage you to nurse your feelings, but the issue is your feelings are not your higher, noble goal. The safe road creates fertile ground for tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
Because if someone's going to promise you safety,
sure,
you'll give up your liberties, won't you? That's the next option. So
which is terrifying.
We are moving towards that in our society. Alexander Hamilton said, "To be more safe, they at length become more willing to the risk of being less free." So, I mean, that's just
you look at our rights are being challenged now with the current administration because it's all about keeping us safe.
Right.
And people are falling in line with that,
right,
which is really a frightening thing.
Right. And the generations before us, you know, they fought wars. They commanded freedom, justice, and peace and social cooperation. And they really stood for to fight for those causes. But they were not shirking in facing danger. They faced mm-hmm. danger willingly.
And you could do both. You don't have to be run in front of traffic all
exactly.
day long
exactly.
and to try to cheat death. But making normal, calculated risk for the betterment down the road, not just for my safety today, right this minute.
Right. I think it's if a society can place value that risk is commendable. Is morally commendable. If you're willing to take risk for the good of others, but also for the idea of greatness for the country, that you do that. Bold risk takers who spur safety to the fullness of their lives in order to support the smallness of our own.
See, but if risk is promoted as stupidity.
Yes.
See, that's the thing.
That's
you have to demonize the risk because then no one will take it because then you're just a dummy.
That's the attack we talked about earlier.
Uh-huh.
You're taking
everything
risk.
Has to be like kind of retooled.
You retool what risk is and what is it isn't. You redefine.
Sure.
And so when you makes redefine sense. Everything as our society tends to do,
mm-hmm.
then you change what it is. But you know, just think of it. You've been trained to be resourceful. I know, as a physician, resourceful. You try and find out what the problem is for your patient. You try and come up with a solution that they haven't been able to come up with and give them hope and direction. And at least we try to do that in what we're doing. And you don't look at the fear and focus on the fear other than to understand maybe the origin of it, but you do not focus on it as a power that they cannot overcome.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference.
And fear has a place.
Sure.
I mean, you know, we tell our kids not to touch a stove when they're little, and you know, you build in certain forms of fear as a protection. But when you're talking about adults moving freely about the world who have, you know, jobs and lives and things, and you're kind of putting up the steering gates around them all based on fear.
Well, a lot of it is based on imaginary fear. You know, they're
that's what I mean. You
kind of
got to build the rails. Easier to do any studies or anything easier to do in a city versus a rural setting, or young people versus old people, or is it just kind of an individual thing?
Well, I'm sure there might be some studies out there regarding society's adjustments in different settings. But I think that, you know, one has to look at the liberty of conscience. It's so important. And being able to have that choice. I'm a big choice guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
If you want vaccination, great. If you don't want vaccination, good. But I think it should be your choice. I think that's what...
Well, that's the way we've always been as a nation.
It's incumbent upon you as a grown-up who dresses yourself every day to go make choices.
But the other side of that is wrong choices or bad choices should have consequence. And we've eliminated that in so many areas where there is no consequence. So all these bad things are starting to happen now. And And people reoffend because there's no consequence.
Yeah, it's funny. We've taken the choices away from actual crime, and we've reassigned the punishment to people who are falling victim to the thought police.
Yes, it's, well, it's pre-crime.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Pre-crime.
Well, it's a good movie. Huh? But, you know, I think the other thing is... Alistair MacIntyre says, if someone says that he cares for some individual community or cause, but if he's unwilling to risk harm or danger on his or her own behalf, he puts into question the genuineness of his care and concern.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do that again.
I said, if someone says that he cares for some individual community or cause, but if unwilling to risk harm or danger on his, her, or its behalf, he puts into question the genuineness of his care and concern.
Yeah. How much do you really worry about me?
Right. How much do you really care about me? Are you out there in the trenches? Are you helping? Do you show up to work every day? I mean, there were certainly medical heroes at the hospital during the time because they didn't know what was going on. They didn't know if they'd die, if they got it.
Yeah, they were totally flying blind, and they went anyway.
And there were your police and your first responders. They were there. So they took it upon themselves. Well, so what? I'm going to be there.
And then how brutal to flip the tables on them. Now they're the bad guys. Now they won't toe the line, and it's like, well, no one cared about that when they were saving everyone, but now we can. Now,
throw stones.
Well, now the panic is off, right?
Right.
So now it's not that big a deal, which is really what that telegraphed.
Right.
And so now we can go back and victimize those people. That doesn't lend a lot to credibility either.
No, it doesn't.
That isn't the kind of thing where people go, oh, okay, these guys have a good, solid plan, and this all makes perfect sense. It's like, well, that didn't add up for even, you know, even people who must have shown up brand new.
Yes. Exactly. Well, you know, I know I did a talk once about this. I'm trying to get my notes for that talk. It was something I had said that was interesting. But
let's take a break. We're like 30 seconds early, which we've never done. Jared, you're going to get credit for this. Put it on our blotter that we took a break 30 seconds early. Never happened in years and years and years. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Tom Andrews, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy.
We play this live stream at home now.
Exactly.
In every life we have some trouble.
Turn it into a shot.
But when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy.
We need to pipe this in, you know, somehow, as an undertone.
I like that in my office. Oh,
yeah, because you know the funny part of that little song? I'm sure he says other things. I've only ever heard that one part because that's what I clip. But you hear that little tune, and you immediately... He actually was on to something.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's kind of like, it's kind of a happy little tune. And I think, you know, my mom was always big on that. Whenever you were having, you know, sports didn't go right, you know, school, whatever. And my mom was like, put a smile on your face and go out there and go see your friend or whatever the thing was. Put a smile on your face and go do that. Nobody wants to look at that look on your face, and it's not going to make you feel better. Her thing was, put a smile on your face and go about your day and stop doing that.
Yep.
And you know, it's kind of simplistic advice, but after, you know, 18 years, actually, we all do it in our family.
Yeah.
And she was right. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of obsession of. On the unpleasantness, and I think the more you look at it, the bigger it gets, like anything else.
I'm sure you had a great mom, too.
I had a great mom, and, you know, the funny part was she we during the pandemic thing, people told her not to travel. You know, don't travel. You'll die. Uh-huh. You're going to die. Don't travel. And it was a wedding we had to go to. And she and I both laughed about it and said, well, I guess we're not going to live forever. I guess we better go. You know, what the heck? Turned out she had pancreatic cancer. And in 2 months, she would be dead. Had no clue.
But she went to the wedding.
But she went to the wedding.
Had
it was
a great
the last
time.
Huge family event. It was awesome. We had a great time. And she was on her way out anyway, totally unbeknownst to her.
Mm-hmm.
But if she would have followed the prevailing sentiment and been safe at home with her mask on and, you know, isolated and all that stuff, that would have been the end.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, yeah. Wow, cautionary tale.
Absolutely.
That was my pandemic cautionary tale right there. It's like, aha.
Aha. And there's another side.
Safe is sorry.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a good story. It really does. Because, you know, coronavirus has created such anxiety, coping, stress, fear, and worry. But, you know, there's been a secondary problem with the COVID, and that's alcoholism, family abuse, drug abuse, suicide, 1 out of 100 deaths. And, you know,
oh, there's
adults.
So many,
and all the kids,
so many things.
All the stuff with kids.
And then the learning problems. The schools to this day, they were saying that the financial cost is in the billions because of companies not functioning at full capacity, the kids not going to school at full capacity, that the learning cost will be huge.
Yeah.
And the long run.
Well, look at how many people elected to either leave their employment or work from home during that whole process.
Right.
And now that it's kind of lifting and things are somewhat getting back to normal, we have a long way to go. They still don't want to go to work.
Right.
You know, they've got into this mindset that I don't have to work.
Right.
And I
don't have to show up.
Yeah.
Or even if they're called to go back to work, I can say one of my children has got to go back to work. She thought she was going to get a day off to be at home.
Yeah.
And she's got a newborn child. And so she's got to go 5 days a week, and she thought it was only going to be four. So she's disappointed. Mm-hmm. But at J.P. Morgan, they were going to have everyone come back to work, and then they backed it off because the people were saying, why?
Yeah.
And so they adjusted their work schedule.
I can understand it if you're in a job that you can do from home, and I think we have learned that there's a lot of positions.
You don't actually have to cram everybody into a giant office.
Yeah, you don't have to go to an office, but you can do it from home. But there's particularly in the trades, there's so many positions available for people to work, but nobody's applying because they don't want to go back. And I don't know if it's the fear of COVID or if it's just this mindset we've instilled in people that you don't need to work. You know, at some point the government will step in and take care of you. I mean, there's a lot of factors involved and it's affected a ton of people.
I would think the rewards of working, not working are significant for those who can't, who the wage doesn't compete with the government handouts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be real hard. And but the unintended consequences are huge. You know, I think there was a study done in experimental psychology in 2020 by Dr. Mugo Grasso, and that about stated that COVID-19 elimination efforts have been moralized to a sacred level. And he says it blinds people to the terrible human cost, which it has been, which is suicide, drug abuse, alcoholism, isolation, and confinement. Imprisoning people is associated with punishment of a criminal, he says. Your rights to work, recreate, socialize, travel, and collaborate have been denied, and this has led to these high rates of suicide attempts and drug overdoses. The UN has predicted 420 million people will face poverty, but since this new war, it'll be, they're saying 1.7 billion. But anyway, because of these lockdowns, and we have, you know, I think, like the Jewish philosopher who was released, she was a concentration camp survivor. She says that some of her family escaped Nazi Germany and said that one characteristic of a culture at risk of endorsing acts of evil is not stupidity, but a curious, quite authentic inability to think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm talking about. This is why this mass formation psychosis is so important, because we cannot lose our ability to think. Mm-hmm. We have to process this stuff, this information. It's very important. I hear these people are very pro-vaccine, but they can get on. My wife listens to him all the time, the guy from Stanford, and he's an Indian fellow, very smart fellow. And he tries to say, guys, you know, yeah, vaccines are good, but why are you not thinking this whole process through?
Right.
And he does a very good job, and he's intellectual. But see, Goebbels doesn't want anything to do with intellectualism.
No.
And neither does neither people who, because that threats the power. Because anything that has an element of truth is going to destroy their lie. And when you destroy their lie, you destroy their control.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, and then the wild card we haven't even brought out is like our physicians, for instance. My doctor told his patients who had had the virus, he said, you should not get the shot. This is really dangerous for you. And people died. They did it anyway because they got browbeaten by their spouse, their work, their whatever. And their, I forget.
Well,
the actual.
a lot of employers required it, which
no matter what, even if your physician said no,
crime. In fact, that same doctor said that one of the first lessons you learn in epidemiology class as a doctor is you never inoculate somebody for a disease they've already had because you've got the natural antibodies, and when you give them the jab when they it's so dangerous because it flips your whole immune system around, and these are the patients he had that died.
Right. If you've had a reaction I have patients come to me and say, I had a reaction. I am not taking the booster because they said, I know what's going to happen. Of course, they have these young people. You can see the soccer players collapsing on the field, football players, basketball players. I guess John Stockton had an article. He said there's been 500 athletes that have died from the vaccine. It's not being talked about. And the VAERS report, the vaccine adverse events reported, are not being reported. And even now the judge ruled that papers to be released by Pfizer, but they're not fast enough to be released. But it showed in their initial that the death rate from the placebo and the Pfizer vaccine, the Pfizer is 5 times the rate of placebo.
Right.
But they didn't show that.
No.
And they see, and that sort of
anyway.
Thing, so there's already a divide, right? We've already exposed the divide. So you have the people that have kind of succumbed to the fear theme, how much or how little, or no slight on them, but that's kind of that resonates for them. Then you have the other people that are like, hey, wait a second, when was the last time the government did a great program and actually helped me and was good at it? like there's that whole dialogue, right? You get
right.
that going.
And the people on the fear side are people that are pro and con vaccine.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, that's the funny part too, because a lot of those folks were not big on childhood vaccines. They were worried about autism, things like that. But okay, so you do that. You've already kind of culled a little bit. You've got a little bit of a split going on. Now you throw in a thing like that where all of a sudden the science is coming out and you can't really hide from all of it because our Goebbels isn't,
what you do,
powerful.
You block it from the media.
Right.
You block it from the media.
But as that comes out, what happens, and I know you can't be people. I mean, I know you see people, but you can't be them. What happens if you have sort of thought, okay, my world is organized over here. These guys are telling me the truth. I'm going to, I'm kind of in the fear camp here. I've got to do it against all odds. I've got to vaccinate everyone I could find. They start finding out this stuff. What happens then?
Their whole belief system, yeah.
Yeah, how does that go?
Usually they double down.
Oh,
really?
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, I didn't see
that.
I
was like, oh, you're going to know the answer. Really? Oh, okay.
They double down.
Oh, shoot. Okay, so there's no like... cracking the armor. No, cracking the armor.
The ones that will listen and say something are the ones that have had the vaccine, still got COVID, and are suffering from long COVID now. Mm-hmm. Now, those people are awake about...
They're considering maybe changing their jersey.
Yes.
Play for the other team.
Yes. I mean, when you had the president pushing for it, both presidents, you had Fauci pushing for it, you had all the people pushing for it, and we didn't know the details, it seemed reasonable to get it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But once you have reactions and once information comes out, you need to look at that narrative and say, well, maybe it's not a good idea,
right?
For me, at least.
Well, and then over time, let's face facts, you have a lot of people who have lost you know, you were telling me all the different people at work, you know, the brother, the friend, the sister-in-law who had a stroke. She reported her own VAERS. Her doctor wouldn't do it. Right. I don't want to be in that. I'm not going to report that. She's like, I don't have any heart problems. How am I having a stroke?
Yep.
Turned out she had a valve thing in her heart that she didn't know about, congenital defect from when she was a kid, allowed the blood clot to shoot right through, and poof, stroke.
Well, and then
miscarriages.
I spoke with a nurse at one of the mental health centers. She was 19 weeks along. She said, "Oh, she's had three healthy kids, no problems." And they kind of browbeat her at the work to get the vaccine. So she got the vaccine, had miscarriages in a week. So these are the things, and she knows for a fact that it was from
talk about mental health. I mean, that would work.
I had a lady called. She at work, and she said, you know, my daughter just switched from one agency to the other. It was like something to FAA or something like that in another state, and they said, no, you have to have the shot. She's like, I don't know if that's such a good idea for me. And you have to, or you're not getting the job. Okay, I'll do it. She within a matter of like days. I mean, it was not like months later. It was right away. She became paralyzed to the point where she can now no longer feed herself.
Yep. Yep.
And so those people are looking around going, hey, wait a second. Where's that in the thing? Where's that in the dialogue?
Right.
And so then the eyes are kind of popped open.
Well, that's what I see.
I think they might be lying.
I see a lot, and I think you're right, because I have talked to people that have doubled down. They still, in the face of all the new information, are like swearing their allegiance to a vaccine. But there are still people that are now looking at it and saying, hey, wait a minute. This is...
Yeah, when as Americans do we ever take away everyone's choices and, you know...
But, yeah, just that reason alone. I mean, really, do we want to give up our right to choose?
Medical freedom.
Yeah. Well, I think C.S. Lewis has a couple quotes I like. I care far more about how humanity lives than how long.
Hmm. Yeah.
That choice of freedom. And then he says, let the doctor tell me when I shall die unless I do so and so. But whether life is worth having on those terms is no more a question for him than for any other man. On just the same ground, I dread government in the name of science. That is how tyrannies come in.
Mm-hmm.
That's C.S. Lewis.
Mm-hmm. Because everything run by experts has a, you know, the more you, it's people. Right? I mean, this isn't some laboratory of perfection. This is all being run by people. People have motivations. People have, they have a lot of different reasons. They do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And so when you give somebody that kind of power, unelected power, these are people no one's ever met.
It's a technocratic.
Yeah, who are able to come in
orthodoxy.
And run the technocracy. And we talked to the guy that studies technocracy a lot and has for many years. And the way the technocrats blew up back in the like 1930s, 40s, the way they were really on a roll back then, that we should really be run by the technocracy and not the republic,
right?
The whole elected thing is like dummies electing dummies. Let's get some experts in here. And they got uniforms. And it scared people. They were like, wait a minute, what are these guys, the new brown shirts? And it freaked everybody out. And I thought, maybe we need to get these guys to get some uniforms.
Brave New World.
Yeah.
Huxley would
maybe
agree.
Maybe we can get, you know, the Fauci guys to all get uniforms. That would be very helpful.
Yeah, and I think we need to realize that constitutions do not matter in a really strong medical technocratic control.
No, because it's overridden
it's such a one-dimensional world.
Right.
The whole life is organized around disease avoidance, and it's everything is termed in life and death versus eventually life is non-death, but whatever.
We're going to come back in a few minutes, grab some coffee. Our guest is Dr. Tom Andrews. You're listening to We the People. Better chance you're going to buy at the mall, but it's a 23 or 4 to 1 that you can fall in love by the end of this song. So get up, tell the bookie, put a bet, I'm not a damn thing, we'll go